League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the howling voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Howling indeed. Many, many howlers apparently this week, which I'm excited to discuss.
Well, apparently so, yes. We won't spoil the surprise of those howlers, but I guess just before we move on, Richard, what would be the definition of a true howler, if that even exists, in your opinion? What is a howler?
Like, I hate the term. First and foremost, like I think most goalkeepers do, and it's funny, isn't it, that certain terms become associated with certain things. Like, no one uses the word howler in any walk of life elsewhere. Oh, he's had a howler, except when it comes to goalkeeping. And that's when, and a howler, if you were to describe it and were to use the word, that is where you probably have your worst moment as a goalkeeper, where it is, I can't even think of an example where it's, a ball trickling towards you and you take your eye off it, it goes under your foot or goes through your legs or something where it's like, a child could have saved that. That, for me, would be the definition of a howler. Now, I know that what we're going to talk about aren't howlers, but again, without ruining the surprise.
It has to be that, doesn't it? It has to be where it's either gone under your foot, you've physically thrown the ball into the net. I know that pundits like that one, he's thrown one in, but you need one where a goalkeeper has actually thrown it into his net. That is a howler. And then I was trying to think of the equivalent, because you never hear it at the other end, right? No. A striker never commits a howler. So what would be the equivalent for a striker? I'm guessing it's when you take it around the goalkeeper, you've literally got an empty net and you're walking it into the goal and somehow you miss. That has to be a striker's howler.
You would think, or alternatively, they normally then get credit for being in the right place, you know? Being in the right place. It wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for him. Right, okay. Yes, he was in the right place to put it 7 yards wide from 5 yards out. Okay, well done.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
So, staying on the howler theme, we're going to start at Old Trafford. Manchester United 1, Brighton 3, where Andre Onana was said to have made a howler. So, naturally, I hadn't seen these goals before I watched it. And as I was watching it, the second goal went in from Kairi Mitoma. And that was the one where Onana stayed on his line, was perhaps caught between two minds as to whether to come for the cross or not. He didn't. Mitoma's tapped into effectively what was an empty net or an empty side of the net. And I thought to myself, goodness me, is that the howler that everybody's saying Onana has made? Is that what we're calling a howler now? Because that is absolutely ridiculous. And then I saw the third goal go in. And even though it's not a howler, it's certainly an error. But yes, your take on the performance from Onana.
Yeah, he'll be disappointed with the second and third. The second, and again, I feel like we spoke about this a lot on the pod and we'll talk about it loads moving forward, in that there is becoming more of a realisation as to the goalkeepers that can really affect play by being proactive, the ones that are coming for crosses. I know we've given a lot of plaudits to the likes of Rob Sanchez and a few others. David Raya has been very good at it this season. A few others that are coming good distance, taking up really aggressive starting positions, sometimes leaving the goal open to an extent, you know, leaving themselves exposed, but for the good of the team. I thought this was one of those situations where when the cross comes in, the second goal in particular, when the cross comes in, he is just a bit tight to his near, and that's what makes it a tough decision. I think if his positioning was ever so slightly more advanced, this would be a very comfortable take. And even in the position he was in, you could still see he has that moment thinking, do I come for this? The problem he has is it never quite gets to the height where he knows he's going to be above and beyond strikers that might be coming in. Because again, you're sort of reliant on your peripheral vision to an extent to figure out if there is a chance that a striker's going to nip in before you. And if there is, of course, you hold your position on the line, try and make the save. So had it been a touch higher, I think he comes. And at the same time, you watch it again, you kind of get that feeling. If he'd have just dived out, I'm sure that he would have got two hands to it and held the ball. So I think two things. One is, yeah, certainly the positioning will be one that he looks at. Could he be a little bit more aggressive in the starting position? And then even then, if that peripheral vision, if he has got a bit of a picture as to what's around him, I still think he can make the dive out and impact play. The interesting thing is, though, even if he does that, let's say he dives out and can't catch it but parries it and they score, it's probably branded even more of an error. So I can understand why a lot of goalkeepers, if they know it's not going in the goal, would rather take the position and maybe wait on your line, because a lot of the times commentators won't necessarily pick up on it. Of course, they pick up on it even more because of then the third goal. And we've seen some examples of this weekend where if a commentator brands something as not being particularly good, it's amazing how then after that, seemingly you can do no good, you know, or even if you do well, you might get the odd one like he's made amends. But a lot of the time they'll try and find things to almost compound the fact that something did happen that wasn't particularly good before that. But the third goal, yeah, look, one he'll be really frustrated with. Look, it is a greasy surface. It's kind of bobbling into him as it's whipped in. It's not on the full. It's not kind of taking a bounce and easy to take. And at the same time, it's just mishandling. You know, he's made a good decision to come out and try and cut out the cross, and he's just mishandled it, and then he can't get on the second ball, and it's that horrible moment.
Okay, you mentioned Robert Sanchez there, so we'll move straight over to Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 3, Wolves 1. The equaliser in the first half from Matt Doherty of Wolves. Again, branded as a howler in some quarters. We'll get on to the pundits in a moment, because a few comments made by them at half-time, which I thought were questionable at best. But yes, that equaliser. Sanchez has spilled the cross, and it's been tapped into an empty net. What say you?
Look, it's an error. It's one that he will be frustrated by. But for me, it's really difficult, this. Like, they make out as if, I heard, I know you're going to say it in a minute in terms of the punditry, like it's, you know, a regular catch. It's not. It's a ball whipped into the front post that isn't easy to deal with. What makes it even tougher, I think I counted, it might have even been more than this, there were at least 11 men in his six-yard box at the time. So you're trying to navigate your way through 11 people to try and get to the ball. For me, this was as simple as it should have been a punch, not a catch. You know, I think in that situation where you've got so many people surrounding you, you're almost falling back into the goal in order to try and claim the ball. It's such a difficult skill to hold on to the ball. And again, you know, say about the greasy surface, and this probably sounds like a typical goalkeeper kind of using that as a potential excuse, but it's not an easy ball to claim when you're having to do everything you have to do to get to the ball, which he does brilliantly, by the way. Like, gets himself there, gets to it at a high point, and then at that point, I think that's just one where you punch it back from where it came and no risk. You know, and in fairness to Sanchez, you know, we say this, and a lot of the time he does it, and he does it really well, and you know, does some of the actions he does, you know, I wouldn't have dreamt of doing, and he does them successfully. So he is a goalkeeper that's willing to take risks, but I just think in that situation, that probably is two fists, get it back to where it came.
We've been quite defensive of Sanchez this season, but the issue with an error like this is that because the narrative has already built up with the Chelsea community, a very negative narrative towards Sanchez, a mistake like this then just ramps that up and everything goes into overdrive. But I said we were going to talk about the punditry. There was just one comment made by Jamie Carragher at halftime here. It's Jamie Carragher and Emmanuel Petit agreed with you, said that he should have punched it. But then we've heard examples this week and all the time that when a goalkeeper punches it, pundits then say, well, why didn't he catch it? So again, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But Carragher said, and I was trying to get my head around this once he'd said it, because it was a real thinker. He said that he basically suggested that Sanchez is a Premier League goalkeeper, but as we can see from that error, he's a Premier League goalkeeper for a team in the bottom half and not the top half. And I just thought, what an odd thing to say. And then I tried to think of the logic and say, okay, well, if a less successful goalkeeper in your eyes would be with a lower level team and not a top level team, I can kind of understand that. But then you're also inferring that a lower level team would look at a mistake like that of Sanchez and go, okay, yeah, we'll take him, as if to suggest that the quality's not as good. It was just a very odd comment to make.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's probably one of several that he's made over time where I think he just says things that come to him in the moment. I think we've seen certain examples of that where the filter mechanism doesn't quite kick in when it should. But no, it's a ridiculous comment. And again, the issue that we got here, though, is more the fact that goalkeeping from pundits is still looked at in really basic terms. You know, essentially great saves and errors. And that's it. There's not really much of an in-between. The intricate details that we'll talk about, and the fact that in terms of goal prevention, protecting the space, he's by miles ahead in the Premier League. You know, the number of crosses he comes for, I think the percentage, I think Muric is very high on that as well. Like, the percentage of crosses that are come for is so far ahead any other goalkeeper. Of course, you're going to be more in line to make mistakes because you are playing a game that is so much more effective and proactive. Whereas, and look, I can say this from experience because I, you know, I've said this a few times on the pod where I'm quite honest in that I think I learn early how to play a game without making a mistake. So I'd often come out, you know, and get a 6 or 7 in the papers, but I knew that I could affect the game more. But of course, to fans, to people watching, I was known as a steady, reliable goalkeeper for the clubs that I played for. But I know myself, I could have done a hell of a lot more, but it was I willing to take that risk, knowing that by doing that, you get this kind of punditry, you know? And I've said this before, and I stand by it. I bet if you ask a lot of people at the moment, a lot of fans, a lot of pundits, you know, who's been the lowest performing goalkeeper in the Premier League, there'll be a lot that say Rob Sanchez. Yet you ask anybody in the goalkeeping world, and they'd have him in the top 4 or 5 in the Premier League for all the other things that he does. But it is what it is until there is that level of understanding on goalkeepers, which there won't be from ex-outfield players. It just won't happen. They're not going to be able to invest time to learn and educate themselves on the position. So unfortunately, we're going to have to listen to comments like this for some time to come.
Okay, just a few more in the Premier League to finish up. West Ham 0, Crystal Palace 2. Just wanted to get your thoughts on Lukas Fabianski. That penalty that was given in the last minute, I know that it was the last minute and I don't know whether you could say it doesn't matter as much, but I just felt like this was slightly lax goalkeeping, just a bit lazy from Lukas Fabianski. Poor goalkeeping, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think that, you know, we see so many like this, probably less now than we used to, because I think now it is being picked up on a bit more when it is that 50-50 and you're, you know, the player's running slightly away from goal and you're then looking to get to the ball first. And in that moment, you think, I can get there first. And so you go in fully to try and hold the ball. And of course, if they get a toe, then, you know, it's away from you and there's nothing you can do. There was actually, and I know we'll talk about it shortly, there's a really good example of what you can do in an ideal situation. I thought it was brilliant goalkeeping from James Beadle, where you're not going with your hands, you're going more with the body. Now, you're not going to be able to hold it, but of course, even if the player does toe it, then it's going to hit your hands and you're not going to give away the penalty. But it's tough because a lot of the time when you think you can get there, you are going to go hands first and not body first. This example is probably slightly different because it was a little bit further away from goal and maybe he couldn't have got further across and really got there with his body. But it is a real tricky one. You know, naturally, when you think you can get the ball first, you're going to go all out to get the ball first. And it's that nightmare when they get a toe to it. And of course, the players are, you know, so clever now and they can just quickly get a toe and make sure that their foot hits your hand and it's a stonewall penalty.
Okay, Nottingham Forest 3, Southampton 2. Just a quick one on the goal that was given offside. It would have been the fourth goal for Forest, but it was ruled out. Was that the right call in your opinion?
Yeah, it was the right call in terms of the, you know, we've probably had this conversation many times and the player being in an offside position and impacting the goalkeeper to an extent at the same time. I'm sure that Aaron Ramsdale was very happy to see it ruled out. It wasn't a fantastic moment for him, but at the same time, the rules are the rules. And in this situation, you know, I don't think there were huge complaints on the back of it.
Shame we don't do a midweek podcast because Matt Sells would have been, yeah, certainly headlining that one for his performance in midweek against Liverpool. And just a last one on Emi Martinez. Now, we've spoken about Emi Martinez and many other goalkeepers in the past couple of years about celebrations. I'm all for it. But can a goalkeeper celebrate when they don't actually make the save, which is what Martinez did? And I get it. They'd managed to, it was pretty much the last kick of the game. Trossard drags it wide. Aston Villa come back from 2 goals down to equalise at Arsenal. But can you celebrate when you don't actually save a shot?
Yeah, I think so. It's the same as like when a penalty's missed, you'll have a little celebration. You know, you played your part. In fact, I definitely think so for the fact that you've still played your part. You know, and in fairness, I think he saves it if it's going in the corner. Like, he covers the goal well. His positioning's fantastic. Explosive to his left. So the fact that he's made the striker miss, there is an argument to be said that he played a big role in this. Of course, if his positioning was off, the striker might see more of a gap and put it in the corner. So yes, celebrations when they miss is fine.
I imagine you did many of those over your career, Richard. Can you ever remember celebrating a save? Do you ever do that? Bar a penalty that you would have saved,
no,
of course.
This is it. For me, I was more, I would make the save. I'd often take a bit more time when I was on the ground. You know, if it's gone for a corner or something, I'd, you know, lap it up a little bit by just taking a few seconds lying on the ground. That was kind of my celebration. And then other than that, it was just shootouts. Yeah, just the countless penalty shootouts that I won.
Speaking of lying on the ground, actually, just to finish finally in the Premier League, have you ever injured another player during an action, a goalkeeping action, which is what Kepa very nearly did in Bournemouth's win at Newcastle on the weekend?
I have, and I don't know if I've told this story before, but it was, yeah, it put me off for the rest of the game. Like, I couldn't get my head back on the game. I remember, I think it was Charlton at home in the league for Brentford, and it was Shea Logan. And I remember it was one that came, the ball's coming through, there's a striker and Shea running towards me. I'm running out. I've got there first and cleared it, and then I've absolutely clattered Shea. And all I can remember was he was having like a fit or something on the floor, and I'm like, oh my God, I think I've killed him. You know, and then the doctor didn't help because he's come on and they're obviously giving him treatment on the field and he was going to have to be subbed, of course. And he made a comment to me along the lines of, oh, that's a sign of brain bleeding. That's not good. And I'm like, you can imagine, there's still 20 minutes to go in this game. And I'm like, oh my God, I've done something really serious to this lad. And of course, there was no, you know, I've come out to clear the ball and we just had a collision and it's full speed, both of us. And I think it was might have been my knee or my thigh that's hit him in the face. It was, yeah, horrible. And then I just, yeah, couldn't get my head back in the game, I'll be honest, after that. This was a little bit different with Kepa, certainly not as intense as that. But
well, I mean, I didn't expect that to be as dark, is it? Sorry, just to, can we just confirm that Shay's okay? He was okay after the game and he's now fine and living a happy and healthy life.
Yeah, this was it. I mean, yeah, I've taken this pod down a really dark road, haven't I? But it was, no, and that was the thing actually, that he was absolutely fine. The next day, fine, not even a concussion, played the next game, you know. But it was just the fact, did the doctor really need to say that to me? Like, it could have been anything, and it wasn't brain bleeding, you know, like, could have been anything. But he absolutely messed my head up for the rest of that game, he did. So yeah, I blame the doctor for the next goal that I conceded in that game. But no, the Kepa one certainly wasn't as intense as that. But yeah, at the same time, just one of those moments, isn't it? Kepa's actually done really well here, very commanding goalkeeping, got everyone out of the way, claimed the ball, and it's just unfortunate that he's landed on his ankle. Yeah, so not a nice moment, but at the same time, nothing different that Kepa could have done, really.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship, where there were a tale of 1-0. So good to see Carl Rushworth back in action for Hull. 1-0 away at Millwall for him. That was his first league outing since the final day of last season. Incidentally, a 1-0 defeat to Millwall, so the same opposition, but gloves moving forward for him, you'd imagine. Dan Grimshaw, he puts in a good performance despite a 1-0 defeat for Plymouth at home to QPR, currently in for the injured Connor Hazard. And Oliver Dovin, solid again for Coventry, clean sheet in a 1-0 win over Bristol City. He saved well from Naki Wells in the first half. We'll mention Jonathan Bond here too, not a 1-0 but a 2-0 win for Watford away at Derby. That's the first clean sheet for Watford away from home since the 10th of April last year. He's in for Dan Backman. 3 key saves in this one. The best of those, a rocket from Nathaniel Mendes-Lang. And quite the day at Bramall Lane, another 2-0, this one for Sheffield United against Norwich. Angus Gunn with a busy afternoon, unlucky with the opener, I thought. So it was one of those Harrison Burrows with a volley from outside the area. Gunn's touched it onto one post, it's then bounced across the line and hit the other post. Hawkeye, however, adjudged the ball to across the line. He then made two really good stops, so he backpedaled really well in the first half to tip a Gustavo Hamer shot from the halfway line over the bar. That could have been embarrassing. It wasn't. It was actually a very good save. And then he produced a save of the weekend contender in the second half. So he was facing his goal. Shane Duffy has diverted a shot which was going to be an own goal, and Gunn's brilliantly diverted the ball over the top. That's a brilliant stop from him. And then at the other end, there were two moments involving Michael Cooper. So a delicious zinger in the first half. This was exquisite, a real thing of beauty, which I've watched over and over again. But then moments later, literally 5 minutes later, completely unchallenged, he's thrown the ball off for a corner. So I guess this is as close to a howler in this particular pod as we could get. But Michael Cooper, very good this season. Lovely stuff in the first half with his distribution. But then moments later, yeah, throwing the ball off for a corner. But that, I guess, is the life of a goalkeeper encapsulated in five very quick minutes.
Yeah. Well, do you know, had that gone in, then I think, yeah, that might have fallen under that category. It's funny. He's, by the way, he's been brilliant, Michael Cooper, this season. Perfect move for him. And he's just, you know, performance after performance, so solid. They're conceding so few goals, so strong defensively, and he's been a major part of that. But we have these sorts of moments, you know. I've certainly had a few. I always remember one where I went to half volley, and you know when you sometimes almost just forget how to play football for a minute, you know, gone to half volley and I've just kicked the ground and the ball's gone about 7 yards. Thankfully it was in a reserve game and I think my defender came and just hooked it away, so it was fine. But you know, you have a moment like, what have I just done? How has that just happened? And I'm sure that was that moment where he's gone to throw it. You know exactly what's happened. He's gone to throw it, changed his mind, but then yeah, the ball slipped out of his grasp. And yeah, a bit of an awkward moment. But again, another good result for him, another good result for them. And to touch on a couple of the other names that you mentioned there, Kyle Rushworth, you know, pleased that he's back after injury. It's not been an easy season for him so far. Obviously going to Hull, looking to win his place in the team, which we got the impression he was just about to do that, then gets the injury, but certainly has a chance now to kick on second half of the season. A couple of big saves from Dan Grimshaw. Tough time still for Plymouth, but certainly nice for him to step back in for Connor Hazard and put in a good showing. Thought Jonathan Bond was excellent. I mean, big, big result this for Watford after a run of really tough results. As you say, some great saves in there. Certainly the one with his left hand over the bar, sharp. Gets a really good hand to it, puts it over, and certainly stepped in really well for Dan Backman. And some big moments for Angus Gunn. I did really enjoy the one that's come off his defender and just really unorthodox, but just found a way of getting over the bar. I thought it was excellent.
To finish in the Championship, can we talk about the two Jameses, please? So Trafford and Beadle. We'll start with Trafford. Two penalty saves in Burnley's win over Sunderland. And this was just glorious to watch as you're reclined on your sofa on a Friday night watching Championship football, all the customary action of the Championship. An 86th and 97th minute penalty save from Trafford. Wilson Isidore was the taker, who was beside himself at the end of the game. But it wasn't just the penalty saves, it was the mind games, it was the celebrations, it was the unwavering belief that Trafford has in his own ability.
It was just theatre, wasn't it? Just theatre. It's interesting because he had obviously done his research. He spoke about this afterwards, where essentially what you see that's really clever about this was that he knew that the lad put it to his right-hand side, but maybe not quite in the corner, and sometimes it can go a bit central. So if you watch just before each penalty, effectively he takes a step to his right-hand side, a good half second or so before the ball struck. I know there was a lot made of David Raya going very, very early for the penalties the week before. There were certain similarities with that in that he's gone incredibly early, but it's again the research that he's done, knowing that the player isn't going to watch him. The player's going to do what he does. So he just put himself, he almost turned the goal into half the goal, you know, took a step to his right and he's like, right, it's half a goal. But what he does thereafter is so good because, again, the lad hasn't necessarily hit it exactly where he wanted to. So the second one in particular, it actually is quite an unorthodox save in terms of how he goes down, but it's the speed at which he's been able to react. He's turned it into that half goal, got down so quickly. As you say, the mind games and bits and pieces before where, you know, he's got a bit of cramp apparently, and then he's got to put his gloves on, which, by the way, that's not an easy thing to do when you've got, you know, end of a game, your hands are sweating. All sport gloves in particular can be really difficult to put on, so that's going to take you a minute or so. The whole thing, it was just, yeah, really enjoyable to watch, and certainly it's fair to say that he's just going from strength to strength.
I did love as well the fact that when we did the pod with James, which would have been about, what, 18 months or so ago now, and he mentioned the fact that I think when he was at Accrington on loan, he'd had a bit of banter with the fans, and he said, I'm never going to do that again. He said, I don't know why I did it. I got involved in a bit of interaction with them. I'm done with that. I'm never doing it. Fast forward to Friday, he's doing the gun signs. He's winking at them, all sorts. I thought that was quite funny. And also, a little stat, Richard, because I had a look at this, and I thought, I wonder if that's happened before at that stage of a game. I don't know whether this was the same stage of the game, but he's the first championship goalkeeper to save two penalties taken by the same player since...
I was going to say me, but it was two different players, wasn't it?
Oh, brilliant. Your first thought, obviously it's me. Has to be me.
Be me. Southampton away. But no, that was two different players. So go on. Who was it?
It was Lee Camp.
Ah, okay.
He saved two penalties from Tom Ince for Rotherham against Derby in November 2016. My head immediately went to John Ruddy, because I thought of that brilliant ending to the game between Cardiff and Wolves in that season when Wolves went up, and after the game, Nuno Espirito Santo and Neil Warnock had a massive dust-up. Neil Warnock refused to speak to Nuno Espirito Santo and he just followed him around the pitch. But Ruddy didn't actually save the second penalty. It was off the bar from Junior Hoyler. And again, two different penalties, because the first one was Gary Madine. But I had a quick watch of that, and it's well worth, if you get the opportunity, have a look on YouTube again, because it's like a four-minute video of that particular sequence of play. It's so good to watch. But we'll move on to the other James. James Beadle, Leeds 3, Sheffield Wednesday 0. And quite simply, was it or was it not a howler?
Oh, that's ridiculous, isn't it? Just ridiculous. When I watched the first half, and I'll be honest, I watched it on mute because I had a few bits going on. And I was actually texting a couple of colleagues at half time, and I was like, yeah, James flying here. Really good first half. Did brilliantly on the goal. You know, nothing he could do about the goal in terms of so brave to come out, use the right technique. Just unfortunate it dropped to them. Two top saves. Like, I was quite excited to watch the half time punditry. Of course, then put it off mute. And then I start to see some of the messages coming in. I'm like, am I watching a different game? And do you know what? I go back to, you know, what I said about the Fabianski example. And this is a really good example where Fabianski's gone with hands trying to hold it, giving away a penalty, the potential being sent off, etc. James has performed the exact technique. And I've spoke to so many people in the goalkeeping world since, and every single person agrees. Like, if he went to hold it, there's a chance the lad toes it away and he gives away a penalty. So you've got to go in with your body. You've got to put your body on the line, be brave. And he did it perfectly. It's a brilliant save. And the fact that it's come up on Sky Sports News, Sky Sports is a howler. This is exactly the issue that we've got in goalkeeping at the moment, is that you have a lot of clueless people, uneducated people that are writing these clickbait headlines. So I felt for him because, yeah, I thought, look, you know, without it being his best performance of the season, you know, it certainly wasn't a poor performance. Some great saves in there, a lot of really good moments. And yet he's come away as a bit of a scapegoat.
Into League One, where there were starts for Zach Sheacock and Marco Morosi. So Sheacock in for the injured George Wickens at Lincoln. He has played a couple of times this season, but he's now been recalled from his loan at Southend, where incidentally he wasn't playing, but he is playing for League One Lincoln. And Morosi straight in for Cambridge. So that's a short-term deal to the end of the season. Decent double save in this one. His first appearance since the final day of last season. It was two apiece with Bolton. And then we're going to talk about four saves. So one from Harry Tyra. That was from Tom Lees to preserve a point for Blackpool at home to Huddersfield. Really top reactions to steer the header wide. Franco Ravizzoli steered a header over on 80 minutes with the scores level between Mansfield and Wickham. The Chairboys bagged the winner just a few minutes later in that one. So a big save from Ravizzoli. Josh Griffiths, man of the match again for Bristol Rovers in their win over Barnsley. Really good loan move for him from West Brom this season. Seven saves in total, the best of those at 0-0 in the first half with Max Waters clean through. Read that one brilliantly. And finally, Sam Tickle. I thought this was really, really brave goalkeeping. It was goalless between Stevenage and Wigan at Broadhall Way. You could argue he'd maybe strayed just a little wide to receive the back pass. It ended up coming short. He's then initially slipped in an attempt to recover, but he still managed to recover to dive at the feet of the attacker and prevent the what would have been the opening goal. Really nice work from Tickle.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. No, I thought he was, and the moment he did get to his feet, so sharp to get there, as you say, so brave. Top save, this one. Enjoyed Ravitt's only save. Lovely top hand. Lovely one that, you know, I know they, and this is often a negative almost towards goalkeepers where, you know, the lads will get the cameras out. But that was one where it would have made a beautiful photo. You know, top hand, top corner, just a really good textbook. Very powerful, very, very good goalkeeping. Probably my favourite save of the lot of the League One saves would be the Harry Tyrer one, to be honest. I just thought his movement, as the ball's crossed in, movement, got himself back onto the line, set position, so powerful. And then to get to his left as quickly as he did and make the save, I thought this was a top, top save.
And finally, in League Two, Jacob Carney in for Newport. It's his third game of the campaign. Nick Townsend out with a knee injury at the moment. A few tricky moments, you'd say, for Carney. One as early as 30 seconds in when he was nearly dispossessed in his own box. But also a very good save from Nathan Smith late on. That would have done him the world of good. Jack Bycroft back in for Swindon. Hokey-cokey keepers at the County Ground this season. He came on for Dan Barden late in the defeat to Notts County a couple of weeks ago. He's since kept his spot with two clean sheets on the bounce and a win over Barrow at the weekend. It was a tough day for Tom McGill of MK, so he spilled a corner to concede the opener at Walsall. He then left a pass short to see the fourth in a 4-2 defeat go in. He did save a decent effort through bodies from Jamie Jealous in the game, but yes, he might look back and not be overly happy with the first and the fourth goal. And I mentioned for Sam Walker, two full stretch saves in the second half at Carlisle, Joe Hugill and Kadeem Harris denied. Bradford left Cumbria with all 3 points, but worth a mention for Walker because we missed this when it happened. He's now on more than 400 career games. He's managed to eclipse that this season with Bradford.
Yeah, well, just a couple that I'll mention there. And Tom McGill, as you mentioned, felt for him because he has had a very good season on the whole and been a couple of moments over the season, but it's always horrible when a couple happen in the same game. And yeah, we've all had games like this where it feels like nothing really goes your way. And it certainly was the case, you know, the case here. And then when it ends in a defeat and the fact that MK have had a bit of a tough run recently, it can all be compounded to an extent. So I do hope he bounces back quickly. But I wanted to mention Sam Walker as well, because I thought these saves were top. The two saves in particular to his right hand side. I think it was the second one where he's full stretch, so powerful, gets himself down. It's that lovely one where it's the fingertips that just brushes the post as it goes wide. Brilliant, brilliant performance from him. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, as we draw towards the end of the show, it's time for this. That's right, it's Clean Sheet Club. We're starting the Premier League. Alison Becker, other end to Kureka. Bernd Leno, 96th consecutive outings. Dean Henderson, 2-2 nils in 2+2 days. Edison, back with a Brazilian bang. Into the Championship, James Trafford, sound the siren. 5 in a row. Anthony Patterson, 2 on the spin. Jack Anik, Jack the Jacks. Carl Rushworth on the board for 24-25. Paul Nardi, lucky number 7. Oliver Dobbin, Sweden not so sour. Jonathan Bond on the board for 24-25, mark 2. Thomas Kaminski, blooming, blanking, brilliant. Freddie Woodman, Kenny Cleno, Jamie Cumming, 3-5, unbeaten in 6. Michael Cooper, staying in contention. Ilian Melier, taking pelters, keeping shelter. Into League One, Nicholas Vilakapic on the board for 24-25, mark 3. Josh Keeley making the board his screensaver. Zach Zhikok, 100%. Ryan Alsop, 8-10. Into League Two, James Belshaw, double bubble. Sam Walker, city boy. Teddy Sharman Lowe, lucky number 7, mark 2. Alex Bass, 4-6. Owen Goodman, 5-9. Matt Macy, other end to Delroy Facey. Philip Marshall, busy boy. Jay Lynch on the board for 24-25, mark 4. Jack Bycroft, 2 clean for comfort.
Nice one, Richard. So four goalkeepers there making their first clean sheets of the campaign.
There you go. There you go. And it's an interesting time at the moment because it does feel like we've seen quite a lot of change in the last sort of month or so. And it's this time of the season, January, February, weather's not great, few injuries here and there, a few goalkeepers having a tough time. Yeah, it does tend to be the way that you see the odd change.
It does. The table is pretty much as it was. I have a feeling that the leader is not going to be caught now, I have to say. So Ian Melier with 15 and 27, Michael Cooper and 15 with 15 and 25, and leading the way is James Trafford with 17 in 26. I think that A, he may not be caught, and B, we could be on for a record this season.
I think we could. I guess the one potential thing that could trip him up is, I suppose, if he does move on, because there's a lot of stories about that. Whether that happens or not, I know Burnley certainly won't want it to happen. So, you know, potentially more of an end of the season one. But yeah, I think it's safe to say that at some point soon he will be donning the gloves in the Premier League again, I'm sure.
Championship flying when it comes to clean sheets this season. But just worth a mention to League One as well, because the closest challenger to the Championship as things stand is Murphy Cooper with 13 and 21. But I'm also going to flag Josh Keighley, who has 11 in 15 now for Leyton Orient since he came in for Zach Hemming. That is an incredible record. Ryan Allsop with 10 in 17. Jacob Chapman at 50% with 9 in 18. And Arthur Okonkwo, one better, with 9 in 16. Injury has obviously halted his campaign. But yes, League One, the closest challengers to the Championship this season.
Yeah, well, Josh Keighley, as a ratio, that might be the best, I'm guessing, 11 and 15. I'm sure that we can work that out as and when. But yeah, very, very good. Really impressive, you know, the fact that he's come in, such a young goalkeeper, since he's been given his chance. And you get the impression, you know, where perhaps there might have been an idea that Leyton Orient might have looked to do something in January when Hemming went back. The fact that he's done as well as he has, you know, you very much feel that they will be his gloves until the end of the season at least.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, Richard, there have been a few GKs on their way, but with, what, 10 days of January remaining, we'll save those to see if anything juicy happens within, yeah, the final couple of weeks of the transfer window. And, well, of course, it's not 9-10 days because it's the beginning of February, isn't it, this season? So, yeah, we've got a couple of weeks until the window closes. So we'll wait until then before we do our special GKs on their way.
Sounds good to me.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers.
Wait.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.